Okay, so welcome back, everybody. We're in for a treat today. We are joined by Chris Doherty, the winner of Vanuatu. And Chris, I know that you're not really accustomed to doing interviews like this, so thank you for taking time to join us today.
No problem. Happy to do it.
Oh, we're doing well. So let's start at the beginning of your Spire experience. So what was your background with the show? Were you a fan before you were cast? How did you get on the show?
Yeah, I was a fan of the show. You know, I was never one to sit inside and watch TV. You know, I live out in the country. I was outside. You know, I think I was out piddling around in my garage. I was working on a truck, and she was my girlfriend at the time. She'd come outside, and she'd caught the first episode of Borneo, the very first survivor ever. And, you know, they kind of gave the rundown of the game and everything, and she come out, and she was like, you need to come in here and watch this. This is kind of interesting. And I ended up coming in and watched the very first episode. And, you know, we kind of got into it every week and was watching it. And by the time the second season in Australia was over, she had me apply, and she was bringing the home applications and just persistence. And you know what? I think it was my third time around. She brought me home an application after season 7 and wanted me to apply for a third time. And, boom, I applied, kind of forgot about it, and the next thing I know, I'm getting a call at work from Mark Burnett Productions.
Not bad. So did you do any kind of preparation before going out to play Survivor?
Did I prepare before leaving to play the game?
Yeah.
Sorry, there are a lot of people who, like, you know, they gain weight or they, you know, they hire a personal trainer or whatever, they go to the gym. Like, did you just sort of go out there and thought, well, I'll just wing it?
Yeah, right on, dude. There was no personal trainer. I didn't buy no memberships to no gym. You know what? I sit down, I talk to my girlfriend, and you know what, dude? I packed on about 20 pounds, went on a cheeseburger and whiskey diet, and just smoked my brains out and enjoyed life clear up until they walked me on that sandy beach and said, well, I don't give you nothing until you get voted out. And no preparation whatsoever. You know, when it comes to studying the place I was going to and learning about their culture and stuff, everyone else was going to do it. So, you know what? I did nothing. I waited until I left.
That's awesome. So it's day one, and you're actually out there playing now. What were your first thoughts about just finally being out there playing Survivor? What was going through your head right then?
You know, it's an intimidating, you know, especially at the beginning. You know, you go on this 24-hour flight to, you know, a small tropical island in the middle of the South Pacific. You're dropped off in the middle of the night, and you're on location for 5 days in a straw hut, you know, with people watching you. You're not allowed to talk, you know. All this crazy shit's happening to you, and you're there 5 days, and you're wondering, ain't I here to play the game? And then, boom, next thing you know, you're on a ship, and it's overwhelming. Finally, when Jeff said game on, everything we had to go to, you know, you crawl through a mile of mud before you're ever on that beach, and you're with your tribe, and you're playing the game. And just to finally get out there, it's a sense of relief from everything you go to just to get to that point. So, yeah, it's tough. The beginning of it's tough, knowing what to expect and how to adapt. And, you know, I'll never forget it, that's for sure.
Yeah, excellent. And just when you're right at the beginning of the game, how do you think your chances of winning were when it was in the early part of the game?
You know what? Yeah, I went in there pretty confident. Of course, I'd watched every season. You know, I'd seen different strategies win. I'd seen not so much the person that wins strategy, but more so the jury strategy on how they decide their votes. Just stuff like that from watching the previous 8 seasons. You know what? I felt like I had a really good chance. When they divided it into a gender war and it was me and 8 guys, I was concerned. I kind of had a plan of teaming up with a middle-aged woman, and that wasn't going to work. So I was confident, though, especially after the first night. I was real confident then.
Yeah, and you know, when this is now the third former survivor we've interviewed. We did interviews with Jim Rice and Albert Strade for a book from South Pacific. And the way to kind of do it is we go through each of their games chronologically, basically, at the major points of interest, kind of from the beginning to the end. And the first thing, you kind of touched on it a bit, was the first kind of strategic point of interest was you find out that the tribes were going to be split men and women. And I know you touched on it, actually, they showed you on the show. saying that this is kind of not good news for you. Do you want to kind of elaborate on that? You know, you mentioned wanting to work with middle-aged women. Why was that, and how did that impact you not being able to do that?
I did. Going into the game, I thought my best bet was once I found out who was on my tribe to go ahead and try to team up with a middle-aged woman and keep somewhat of a secretive alliance, watch each other's back. You know, Colby and Tina did that in Australia Outback, and they were very successful at it. And you know what? I kind of was going to model my game after them. And sure, when we were all sitting there during that ceremony and you know, the Aborigines were welcoming us to their island and just said, well, this is it, you know, guys and girls. Sure, I think if the camera was on me, I dropped my head and I looked to the ground. I thought, oh, my gosh, what is going on, you know? This is crazy. I don't want to be in a camp with, you know, eight other men. It's going to be crazy. And, yeah, my whole strategy, the whole thing that had been running through my head for 5 days of living in a straw hut waiting for this game to begin, and it was all shot down in a second, you know. It was me waiting on Jeff to say game on and immediately figuring out what I was going to do. And, you know, you got to – the game's numbers, man. So when Jeff said game on, game was on. I started playing.
Yeah, so after you get back to camp for the first time and you start getting to know everyone, and on your tribes, normal male tribe, you've got a bunch of young, pretty boys, and you've got an army sergeant, you've got Chad, who's got one leg, he's a teacher. What were your first impressions of your tribe at that point?
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, my impression was a lot different how you just put it. I didn't look at it as having, you know, these four pretty boys. We had four real dumb kids in our tribe. It was basically there just to look at all the ass on the women and wait for the merge. That's about it. I mean, us others, there's nine of us, man. Are you going to walk out on the beach with three others the first night and leave the numbers up top, you know, putting a little makeshift hut together to sleep under? They wandered out to the beach and stayed up there, and there we laid. The quote-unquote fat size. Right. Well, you had the dumb kids out on the beach and the smart old guys back in the hut, and we all just kind of laughed. We were like, really? They're naive. And game on, man. Game on.
Do you want to talk to us a bit about how that the quote-unquote Fat Five Alliance really forms?
How did we really form?
Was it just that first night when the younger dumb kids went out to the beach, the other five of you just said, okay, this is it?
Well, I tell you what, you know, we actually, the very beginning of it was when Jeff said game on. We headed to the left of where we were welcomed into the Aborigines Island. We went to the left, the girls went to the right, and it was like everybody started pairing up and talking. It was real dark, and game started, man. I started walking next to Bubba, Travis Sampson, and we teamed up right there. And we had already been, you know, scoping everybody else out the whole time we were sitting there during that ceremony. And, we no longer got back to camp. We had an understanding. It was a quick agreement. We just wanted a little bit of security. We got back to camp. We started making a makeshift hut. And we pretty much got the hut to where we could all lay under it and stay out of the rain. And Brooke and Brady and the other young guys headed out on a big piece of coral and was sitting out there. And that's it, man. That's all it took. Us five were laying there, and we got to talking. And the next morning, Chad said he had Rory in. Rory said he had Chad. Sergeant approached me at the camp. And, you know, glory, honor, faith, army, boom, death to the end. And bam, dude, it was on. I had an alliance.
And at that point, was that your plan for the alliance? Were you happy to just go with those five all the way to the end?
Well, you know what? There's a sense of security you get, you know. Once, you know, don't get me wrong, my sense of security really wasn't in effect until after our first tribal council. Dude, I totally bombed the first challenge. I couldn't get across the beam. So me figuring out whether or not these guys that I had their word, we were going to stick together because of our age, because of our physical stature, because of how we wanted to play the game, I was real concerned, you know. Any one of them could flip, but, no, it gave me a sense of security. I had nothing to worry about. The challenges weren't as stressful. It didn't matter, you know. We had an alliance. We knew we were good to go to the merge.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what we saw was the men now historically in season split men versus women have had to deal with a balanced beam. every single time in that opening challenge, and you famously were not able to handle the balance beam. Were you in such a position already at that point that your failure in that challenge, which not to be disrespectful, but just to be blunt, kind of cost your tribe the first immunity? Were you already confident that your position was strong enough that that didn't matter, that you were still going to be safe?
Well, you know, once again, I was in an alliance. I had had an agreement with the other guys. And when we went into that challenge, I had a safety net in place already. But, you know, we hadn't been to a tribal council yet, you know. These guys are telling me we're together. We're going to stick together. We're going to get rid of these young guys. They're too strong. They can't make it to the merge. Sure, I had a sense of security. But I tell you what, you know, that first challenge, it was pretty intimidating. You know, it's the first time you're walking up, you're seeing the challenge, you're seeing Jeff, and you look to your left and there's a production crew of 350. You know, you swallow your tongue and your gut sinks and you clam up. It's just like, wow, what's going on here? And I was intimidated and I didn't perform, man. I couldn't get across the beam. It sucked.
Well, you know, as you went on to say on the show, and this is a direct quote from you, in this game you do outwit, outplay, outlast people. You don't outbalance them. And we saw you go on to do all of those things. And now the first boot in your tribe ends up being Brooke. Do you want to just briefly go through how that was decided?
Yeah, we got to talking. I think it was probably our second night on the island. I actually had a verbal confrontation with JP. And I let Sarge and Bubba know, you know, look, JP's gone. I want him gone first. You know, I didn't like the guy. He was kind of cocky. And Sarge was just, he was just hell-bent on Brooke because he thought Brooke was the physically strongest guy there. And Sarge campaigned for Brooke, and finally I was like, look, it don't matter. The first guy can be Brooke, the first guy can be JP. That's fine. So, you know, we all had a consensus, all five of us said, okay, the first one's going to be Brooke, we're going to vote him out tonight. This was after we lost the challenge. And little did we know, Sarge, right before we was going to head to tribal, decided to walk up to Brooke. And, you know, Sarge being the military man he is, was like, hey, Brooke, you're going home tonight. Sorry, casualty of war. And walked away from him. And Brooke's mouth just dropped. We all turned around like, dude, what are you doing? You know, why'd you tell him? If he was about the element of surprise. But Sarge wanted to tell. So Brooke knew. So that's how it all come together.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. And then now the next immunity you guys end up winning, so then the women end up voting Goliath. And so we're now at, for the viewers, is episode 3. And this is a pretty big challenge because Jeff announces the twist that both tribes are going to go to tribal council this round. But you guys are going to play for a reward, the tribe versus tribe, and then the winner of that challenge, they will play for an individual immunity. You know, this is a pretty early on for a twist in the game. What did you think about that when Jeff was telling you about that?
You know, there's always the fear that there's going to be some kind of twist in the game that's going to affect your alliance. And you know what, man, that's the only thing that was running through my head every time we walked up to a challenge or every time we got treat mail was, you know, what news are we going to hear now that's going to affect my alliance? Going on to tribal council at that early in the game, with the numbers the way they were, I wasn't too worried about it. I didn't care if they sent us to tribal council twice in one day. I had the numbers, man. I was safe. You know, the sooner we get rid of these young guys, the better off we are. So it didn't affect me none, you know. Did it concern me? Sure, it always concerns me. But like I said, man, that comfort zone, I had that safety net. I had the numbers. It was a proven alliance. And that helped me along the first half of the game.
Okay. Not long after that, we see Roy starts getting on people's nerves. And we see on the show that Sarge kind of floats the idea of getting rid of Roy before some of the young guys. And then you kind of talk him out of it. Was that accurate, or was there something there that we weren't shown?
You know, that was very accurate how they depicted that. Sarge was just fed up with Roy. Sarge didn't feel as though he was a team player. You know, he was just like, he's not a team player. He wanders off with a machete at 9 o'clock in the morning and doesn't come back until noon. You know, Sarge is like, he's got to go. He's a cancer. He's not a team player. And you know what? You're sitting there. You're only so many days into the game. And, you know, you're wanting to vote someone off out of your alliance, a black overweight guy that can't control what comes out of his mouth. You're wanting to get rid of him and bring in a young, attractive FBI agent named Brady into our alliance. And I'm like, Sarge, no way, dude. That's non-negotiable. That is suicide. We're not going into the merge with Brady. Every time he smiles, like his teeth just glisten. And says, no, dude, Brady's gone with the other young guys. Rory, his big, fat, black ass is coming with us, no matter if he's gone all day or what happens, man. And Sarge weren't even gone, but no, man, I was calling the shots, and they picked it perfectly.
Well, what was the deal with Sergeant? Because it looks like, well, by the sounds of it, he was trying to run the alliance sort of like a military unit.
You know what? You know, after my season aired on TV, I had people calling me and asking me in interviews, who run the alliance, you or Sarge? And you know what? I actually had a three-way call going on during an interview. I had a guy call Sarge and ask Sarge, who was making the calls in your alliance? And Sarge told him, I was making the calls. I made every call in our alliance until the men were completely gone. But it was portrayed as though Sarge was in charge. But they did the same thing with the women. The whole game, I thought Amy made calls. But Amy never made a call. After Final Tribal, when we was on live TV for him to announce the winner, I found out Lee Ann was making the calls with the women. I had no idea.
Yeah, and that's something we'll actually be getting to a little later down the road once you're dealing with the women more often. Just quickly, in terms of the rest of the pre-merge booths, we saw you guys vote out JP and then Brady in back-to-back tribal councils. Did it really matter to you which order they went in as long as their votes were just gone?
Yeah, no, it did. It mattered. What was that?
Why JP before Brady?
I tell you what, I wasn't targeting Brady early because in the very first tribal council, after I pathetically failed to cross the ballot theme, Brady didn't vote for me. Brady didn't vote for me at all. Brady voted for, Rory. So, you know, we get back to camp and the next morning, Brady made it a point. Brady approached me out on the beach and was like, hey, dude, what's up? Sucks you didn't make it across the beam. Thought I'd let you know, I didn't vote for you last night. I voted for Rory. So, you know, Brady wasn't a target. Brady never targeted me. But, you know, JP was, he was just overbearing and just nonstop campaigning with wanting to stay in the game and all this nonsense about how he needed the TV exposure. He wanted to be a model. And it was hilarious, man. We made fun of him. And we sent JP packing. And then, you know, it really didn't matter. It was going to be Brady or John Kimmy. And John Kimmy wasn't even playing the game, so that's about the only reason Brady was third. He was a huge threat in the challenge too. So, you know, after JP, it was Brady or John Kenny, and it didn't matter after that.
Okay. Now, something I want to ask you about is, to this point, what we've seen from you on the TV is that you're very good with tribal council questions, and that's obviously a trend that we saw continue throughout the entire game, and certainly through Final Tribal Council. What did you have any kind of, maybe even a good way to put it is like advice in terms of tribal council? What was like your approach with dealing with Jeff?
Well, you put that well, dealing with Jeff. man, I tell you what, he can make or break you in tribal council. It seems like, you know, but you know, that's his job. What he's doing is his job, and you know, it's all about him to ask the right questions to get the right kind of answers. And you know what? There's things you say and there's things you don't say. And the one thing I always tried best was, I didn't let him walk me into something I didn't want to talk about. And, you know what? It is. It's tough. You know, tribal council, you got to play off of other people as well. A lot of times, a lot of pressure would be taken off of your answers because you would have conflict between two people or Twyla wouldn't shut up or something like that. But you always had to have your guard up with Jeff, and I'll be honest with you, dude, if he didn't like your answer, he would tell you, you know, that's a bogus answer, you know, you're holding back, you know, and he wouldn't ask you questions, or, you know, he wouldn't give you good questions, you know, if you just sat there and kind of doped him along. If you know what, he didn't want you stringing him along because he knew what was happening anyway, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he's going to dig at you to get the information regardless, and And you just gotta be tactful with, you know, what you're saying. Plus, you know, are you on the chopping block, that tribal? There's a lot of factors into it.
So in terms of, did you do any preparing in terms of how you were going to deal with tribal council with Jeff's questions? Because it seems like you handled almost all of them pretty flawlessly in terms of the objectives you probably wanted to achieve with each answer. Was there any, like, before going to each tribal council, obviously, you know, you're going to prepare for the final tribal council. Were you kind of trying to anticipate what Jeff might be asking you and how to best kind of keep your cards close to the vest?
You know what? To sit there and start your journey to tribal council, I want to be honest with you. I never thought to myself, okay, I got to be prepared for what Jeff's going to ask me. Never once did I do that. I'm concentrating more on who's going home and is it going to be me? You know, I don't know. I didn't do much preparation on my way to tribal council, no. You know, I prepared back at camp. I prepared person to person with the people I was playing the game with. I mean, clear up until it was gag order and we headed to tribal. But, you know, running through my head, pyrotechnics are starting my flame, I'm tribal. I'm not doing much preparing mentally, you know. I'm nervous, and I want to get it over with. And you're sitting on a little teeny log, and it lasts about 3 hours, and it sucks. You got a long walk back to camp, so there's a lot of crap going through your mind, you know.
What happens when people don't answer questions in the way that Jeff wants? Because we've spoken to some people who are on the show recently, and they've said that when people kind of evade Jeff's questions, he just kind of yells at them until he gets what he wants. Was that your experience as well?
Well, you know what? To some extent, Jeff gets irritated, you know. He's got to go along and he's got to get information out of us. And, you know, he's trying to produce a storyline for the season as well as all the people editing the show. And, you know, this is just through experience talking, but absolutely. There was a point in the show, I think there was maybe, I don't know, it might have been before we merged. It was after the mix-up. He climbed Julie's butt in one try.
Sure, not for the last time.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, wasn't giving him the answers he wanted, and she was being short and a little bit, you know, just being kind of comical about it and wasn't being serious about anything he asked her. And he called her out on it and said, I'm asking you questions out of courtesy. And you know, he'll call you out on it in a heartbeat. And, you know, if he doesn't get what he wants out of you the first time, he'll use somebody else. He'll ask someone else a different question to get you worked up and to get them to say something that might get you worked up so you want to elaborate, you know. Trust me. He is a master at what he does at tribal council. The man is very good at what he does.
That's pretty much what everyone's told us, yeah. And so I think the next big thing we see is, you touched on it briefly, is the big swap happens. And for that, the way they went about doing that is each tribe elected a chief. And for that, you guys ended up selecting Sarge. How did that selection process kind of go down?
Sarge, man, he was a drill sergeant in the Army. He's a leader. He's outspoken. I mean, you know, we all stood on the beach, the Aborigine come in the canoe, handed us a couple things, and said, you know, pick the chief. I mean, it was like a five-second decision. We're like, Sarge, get up there, dude. Get the hat. Get the sword. Let's go. No particular reason. We didn't know what it was leading to. We really wasn't even anticipating where it was going. We talked about it, you know, what's going to happen. Man, your heart drops. You get sick to your stomach when Jeff says drop your buff. I know that, you know.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a minute. And just before we actually get to the swap itself, what do you know about the women's tribe just at this point?
Very little.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
Very little contact with them, not talking to them at all. We learned a little bit about them after John Kenny went over and visited them. But, yeah, we knew very little about the women.
Okay, and now as a result of this tribe swap, Scout ended up mixing the tribes up and picking who's on which new tribe. And your new tribe, you ended up with Chad, John Kenny, Sarge, Julie, and Twyla, which seems like an excellent draw for you, I would think. What were your first thoughts about this new trend you were on?
Relieved. I was relieved. I was so relieved. I mean, I was still with Sarge, one of my initial alliances, Chad as well. With us three being three strong, I know the two girls ain't going to team up with John Kenny and go to tribal council with a tie. That ain't going to happen. So it happened. I knew that. So I was very comfortable with the fact that, you know, my new tribe was two guys I was already aligned with, two women who were on the short end of the stick and ready to just get security themselves. And then you got John Kenny. He was a expendable man. I mean, it was like he didn't even play. You could just use him. He was nothing.
So what went into the decision to get rid of John Kenny instead of one of the women? Because it seems like at that point it's still, you know, men versus women to some extent, or is that not really the case?
Well, you know what? John Kenny was just lazy. You know, I wanted to get rid of him for so long, but he wasn't a threat, really. Physically, mentally, emotionally, he had nothing about him that was threatening. And he was very untrustworthy. He'd been over with the women. I didn't know what he was capable of. And when you got two girls coming over and they've left the comfort of their tribe and they're nervous and they want to stay in the game, you know what? They come to meet Chad and start really easy. And Chad actually said to me back at the crib, we were back at the crib talking, and Chad was so nervous. He was like, you know what? I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't vote out John Kenny. We need to go ahead and vote out these girls. We need to keep the numbers even. You know, this is still a gender war. And I'll be honest with you, man. I'm the one that convinced Chad and Sarge. I'm like, no, we'll go with the girls. Let's keep the girls. We got to get rid of John Kenny. I didn't want John Kenny to make the merge. And that's all that mattered to me at the time. So, the girls were solid, of course. They're going to say whatever we want to hear. And we voted out John Kenny.
Well, let's talk about that for a bit, because, you know, we saw right after the tribe swap, at that first new tribe immunity challenge, Bubba looks over to you and says, you know, kind of think about the numbers man here, which I think was implying you guys should probably be throwing this and getting rid of these girls, because if you end up winning the challenge, then either Bubba or Rory is surely going to be gone, and then you guys are going to start going down in numbers, whereas in your tribe, the men have the majority. Did you ever consider throwing any of these challenges so that you could get rid of some women and try to take the numbers post-merge?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. I didn't think of it at all. You know, I was looking after my security in the game that day, that challenge, the next tribal council. I wasn't thinking about, wow, when we merge, I sure hope I've done everything I can to make sure Bubba and Rory are here. I mean, they're either going to be here or they're not going to be here. I'm more worried about me than them. So, you know, Bubba's whispering, think of the merge, and he was thinking of numbers just like Chad was thinking of numbers, and they were thinking later on in the game. And I played the game for the moment, and I did that every day. And at the moment, I felt more comfortable with Julian Twyla, and I didn't feel comfortable with John Kenny. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I understood where Bubba was coming from. I didn't know the situation over there. I figured they were dog food. You know, without a doubt. I was shocked to see Rory make it to the merge, but I was playing for the moment, and I had no intentions of keeping John Kenny around to vote off a woman.
Okay, so let's get right to the merge now. And as we see going into the merge, the men are now down 6-4 in terms of numbers. There are six women and four men, which, you know, obviously is not a good side of the numbers to be on. So what's your game plan at this point, now knowing you're down in the numbers, should the original tribes get back together?
Well, when we first merged, my original game plan was that Julie and Twyla was coming with us, that we were good to go, because that's what they told us. And apparently I was naive, but I believed them, you know. I thought, you know what, they left the women, they came with us. They lived with us a couple weeks before we merged, I think 9 days, maybe 11 days. And, you know what, I felt that they would be fools to try to go back with the women. They've already been instituted into our tribe. The women don't know what kind of deals they've made. The women ain't going to trust them now. That's the way I looked at it. And when we first merged, I had a comfort level. I thought, you know, if Twyla and Julie keep their word, I'm good to go. Yeah. Everyone's kept their word to me so far. But that was then. I learned real quick what the women were like.
Yeah, I was rewatching the season two. Cause when we learned that we were going to have you on the show, I went back and rewatched part of the season. And one scene that we see in one of the episodes is Julie telling, lying to Twyla that you and Chad had offered a deal to her as well. So Twyla begins to distrust the deal that she had with you guys. And it made me think, because when you keep Julie around instead of voting her off and you vote off one of the guys, maybe Twyla started to think that, hold on, Julie's right about this, when in fact, you know, as we know, Julie was lying all along.
It was a good play by Julie to bring everything back to the surface, actually. You know what I mean? Because, I'm sure Twyla was singing like a canary to Julie about her and Sarge making a deal. And Julie played Twyla and said, hey, they made a deal with me, too. And, Julie was feeling like an outsider and made a play, and it worked for her, actually. It was kind of dangerous for her to make that move, but I was still more comfortable holding on to the girls than I was to let John Kenny stay in the game. I don't think John Kenny would have been any more loyal to me, Sarge, or Chad at the merge than Julie and Spada was. John Kenny was worthless. I had to vote him out. And yeah, I did. I pondered on it a lot. I thought about, you know, what Julie had to say and how she played Twyla, and it all comes to surface at that tribal council. I sat there sick to my stomach worried about it. But, man, you make your moves and you play the game, and what happens, happens.
Yeah, so after that first, merge, after that first tribal council, after the merge, Rory's now gone, and so the men are now down 6-3 in terms of numbers. So it seems like, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this term, but a pagonging, which is just, one tribe getting picked off one by one, seems pretty much imminent. So Sarge is the next to go, and what happens is you ultimately end up voting for Sarge, your buddy. You want to tell us what happened with that, and then what you told the women happened with that?
Well, I'll tell you what, Rory goes, we're sitting there at Tribal, and they voted off Rory, and it's a shock. It's a blindside to meet Chad and Sarge. Chad and Sarge were very upset. And of course, I seen this. I knew they were upset, and it surprised me getting back to camp that night how vocal Chad and Sarge were. I mean, they were vocally and upset, and they were verbally bashing, the very women that voted off Rory and was about to vote us off as well. And I sat there by the fire, and I found a moment that this is the time you don't say anything. I'm not stupid. So I got much to say, I got to start playing the game a whole different way now. My alliance is screwed, We're going home one by one. So a new game started, and I kept my mouth shut that night. And sure enough, they had the plan of voting off Sarge because Sarge was strong, very physically strong in the challenges, a lot of endurance. And they let him know immediately. I mean, they didn't hide it from him. They told Sarge, first immunity you don't get, we're sending you home. You're too big of a threat. So Sarge goes home, and it's me and Chad. When we're getting ready to go to tribal, they told Sarge he's going home. It's obvious. John's sitting there with Chad. He's got one leg. He's handicapped. He's kind of inspirational. And, Chad's pretty charming and funny. He's got a real good sense of humor. So, sure, I was concerned, and who's going to be next? Who's going to win the next immunity? But, I went to that tribal, and I voted for Sarge because Sarge was going home anyway, and I wasn't going to vote for a girl because I didn't want to piss no more of them off. So if I vote for Sarge, I go back to camp. There's no girls mad at me. Chad voted for Eliza. She was pissed off at him. Wouldn't talk to him for a whole day. I voted for Sarge. It didn't matter. He was going home anyway. So that's where I am. I'm stuck with Chad, and I'm playing a whole new game,
So after... Yeah, so after Rory gets voted off, you now know that Julie and Twyla aren't on your side, and you've got this period of about 6 or 9 days where you're just kind of waiting for the rest of your alliance to get voted out. What do you try and do to maybe get some of the women to flip over to your side? Like, how do you scramble during that time?
Well, what I did was I tried not to scramble. I've talked to my wife about it and other people. when I go to charity events or when I go to fundraisers or autograph signings, I talk to people about how I played the game, and I get a lot of people asking me questions, and I've never had anybody ever compare my game, once it was just me and the women, to scrambling. That's what you don't want to do, is scramble. That's so obvious when people scramble. When we merged, we was already approached. Me and Chad was approached by Scout and Twyla about them not liking the arrogance of Amy and Leanne, and they wanted to change the game. So right at the merge, before Rory ever got voted off, Scout and Twyla approached us. And so there was always that glimmer of hope. That door was always cracked with Scout and Twyla, because they really felt as though they were at the bottom of the Women's Alliance, and once the last man was gone, they were going to go next. And, of course, you know, Amy and Leanne, you know, they're all snoozing them, telling them, no, you know, you're final four. But we always had that door was always open for Scout and Twyla, and we just had to find the right time. The right time had to come along. It wasn't necessarily finding it. It was just waiting for it to happen. And the loved ones visit, you know, that ended up being the right time. So, I learned real quick to, you know, when to speak and you know when to keep your mouth shut, when it was me and the women.
Yeah, so when it does get down to you and the women, what we see is after, on the night that Chad gets voted out, you come back to camp and you tell Eliza that Scout and Trial had approached you about this plan that they had approached you with. What was your thought behind that? Because if you do that and news of that gets out, then it seems like they wouldn't want to work with you anymore. So were you just hedging your bets there?
Okay, you know what I thought. You know what happened was you know what, I got outed. You know, I totally got outed at Tribal, and of course everything that came out of that Tribal was about, you know, Scout and Twyla, you know, talking strategy with the guys. And then all of a sudden, at that Tribal, Eliza mentioned she's nervous, and Amy doesn't like it, and Leanne doesn't like it. So when we went back to camp, you know, Twyla and Scout was walking on thin ice anyway. The women were a little bit upset with them. All I did was throw some gas on the fire, because I'm thinking, you know what? I don't have the numbers. When we got back to camp, I didn't have the numbers yet. It was just me, Twyla, and Scout talking about it. There had never been a move made. So I'm thinking, you know what? I want some more longevity in this game. They're not real, real big fans of Eliza to begin with. I could probably ask Eliza, but if I could throw Twyla and Scout under the bus, you know what? I may be final four with Julie, Amy, and Leanne. So that's what I did. I went back to camp. And you know what? Actually, I didn't lie. I told Leanne the truth about what Twyla and Scout had said to me. Scout stood her ground when Amy and Leanne approached her about it. But Twyla sang like a canary and said it was Scout's idea. And then it all exploded. So then they got desperate. And then that's when they were really working with me hard. So, okay, we got to make a move. What are we going to do? And, of course, they're not going to convince Eliza to jump on our alliance. So it was up to me. The ball was in my court.
Yeah, because a lot of people, when they talk about the move that was made there, they try to minimize your role in it. They say, oh, well, Twyla and Scout had to approach Chris a bit. Yeah, he couldn't have done it without them. Can you kind of set the record straight on that?
You know what? We were relying on each other at that point. When I threw them under the bus with Leanne and Amy and Eliza, you know, we were. They had been playing the game on both sides of the fence. And, you know, Chad brought it out in Tribal, and then Scout admitted to it. And you know, I needed them as much as they needed me. But, you know, without Eliza, we were all three screwed.
Yeah,
and you know, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, because obviously by this point, Eliza hates Twyla and Scout so much, and the feeling is mutual, that they're never going to come together on their own. So you now have to convince Eliza to team up with these people who she doesn't like and doesn't trust. How do you go about doing that?
Well, this is what bothered me. This, you know what, you just touched on a point that was the most, it bothered me more than anything about their editing and how they portrayed the whole season. Was finally it come down to where we get back from a challenge, we're going to go to tribal, you know, it was a loved one's challenge, My wife was emotional. The women are thinking with their hearts, they're going to send Eliza home and let me stay because I'm more deserving, my wife. And so I had a lead. I mean, I had to have an opening to go to Eliza. What they aired on the show was about 10 seconds of my conversation with her. That it bothered me. My conversation with her was about 15 to 20 minutes. And when she first turned me down, I just told her, fine, that's fine. Okay, you're going home tonight. I got three more days to figure out a way to stay in this game. And I walked away from her. But they didn't show that. They just showed me telling her, you know, please, you know, trust me. They're going to vote for you tonight. You need to jump over or you're going home. I mean, convincing her, I have no idea whether or not I can convince her. But they didn't portray it in the way I did convince her. I put it on the table. I told her this is the deal. This is what's going to happen. You got a way out. We're guaranteed Final Four. We'll go to the end. I'm your only ally in the game. She said no. I walked away from her and said, fine, I'll talk to you at the Ponderosa when I get voted out after you. And she saw me and said, wait a second. And, I mean, it was a long conversation. It just, they didn't portray it the way I wanted them to. But that was the door that opened up for me to approach Eliza, was the Loved Ones Challenge.
Yeah, and actually we'll talk about that in just a second. But I want to ask you, you mentioned part of the editing may have pissed you off or whatever. How'd you feel about your edit in general, or just the editing of the show? Did you feel like it was accurate compared to your experiences when you were out there?
I thought it was great. I thought they portrayed me perfectly. I really enjoyed all of it. Like I said, that was just the one time, the one conversation I had, and I thought it was one of the most detrimental conversations I had in the whole game, was to flip Eliza over. And my strategy was, if she said no, to say, fine, don't try to negotiate, don't beg her, say, fine. This is how sure I am of myself. You're going home. I'm not. I got three more days to strategize. That's what I told her, and I walked away. And they didn't even show that, you know? They show me begging her, please. You know, that was all part of a 15, 20-minute conversation, you know? I mean, you know, us laughing and goofing off and talking about it. And, you know, that was the only part. The whole show in general, I thought they did a great job. I mean, it made everybody accurate, if you ask me.
All right, so let's talk about this Loved Ones visit for a minute. Your wife, Lori, who was actually, we owe a big thank you to in terms of helping set this interview up, she was then your girlfriend at the time, got to come out to the island and compete in a challenge with you, and that immunity challenge, which you ended up losing, and at the time, you were convinced that you were gone. What was it like getting to see Lori, especially in a position where you were pretty sure you were going to be the next to go?
Well, you know, it brings out emotions, man. I mean, you know, that was, I couldn't tell you, that was probably 24, 25 days into the game, maybe 27 or 28 days into the game. I think it was 28 days into the game. It was emotional. You're living a life for almost a month of looking over your shoulder and not trusting nobody and confiding in people only so far. When she run out or when I talked to her over the internet, it was emotional. It was emotional knowing she was there and she was getting to be a part of it and that I didn't want to disappoint her. I didn't want to get voted out. And it's tough, man. You think, you know, this ain't no big deal. I'll go play this game. I'll do my thing, you know, but it was tough. You know, it was a long time since I've seen her and it makes you, you know, makes you take home and family and it brings you down. It brings you down to level. But it doesn't last too long, I promise. You know, what they're showing on that next episode is, you know, it's true. You know, everybody gets a little emotional and it tugs at your heart. But, dude, that stuff goes away real quick as soon as Jeff says game on. And you forget about it and you play the game.
Yeah, and speaking of playing the game, you're now, after having that conversation with Eliza, where you basically said, you know, all right, then you can go ahead and be the one to get voted out. You have another conversation with Twyla, who says that there may be another path you can be taking, and that may be a better long-term path for you, and that would be to join up with Twyla Scout and Eliza. And suddenly you have a nice majority going, which I would imagine is fantastic news. What was going through your mind after this conversation with Twyla?
That something was going to come together that had been a long time in the making. I mean, since Scout and Twyla approached me and Chad right after the merge about them not liking Amy and Leanne's position, you know, it was relief. To be honest with you, a lot that was going through my mind was the fact that, man, I wish I could have made this move, and I wish this could have happened in this game with Chad still in the game, you know? I think that was more troubling to me than any other guy was seeing Chad go. I mean, I was there with him the longest. But yeah, as it's happening, it's surreal. It's like, okay, something else was going my way. You know, I've always thought that probably 90% of the game's strategy and 9% of the game's physical. No, 9% of the game's mental and 1% of the game's physical. That's it. You got strategy, mental, and you got a little smither of physical. Physical don't mean crap in Survivor. So, you know, where's the luck in there? Because I think there's a little bit of that. So some things go your way and some things don't, and everything come together. I mean, what if me and my wife would have won that challenge? You know, what if I would have got immunity that one time? I mean, that would have totally changed the whole outlook of the game, and I probably would have got voted off next. So
yeah.
Luck, man. I was just feeling fortunate, and I was, you know, I was hoping things would continue to play out.
Yeah, we've actually, you know, we acknowledge that luck, I think, is a very big part of Survivor. And now I guess the next big step in terms of making this plan really happen is Eliza. You need to kind of convince her that she should be getting on board with this, and that it's a legitimate offer, because, you know, when we see you approach her about this, she says, well, I feel like you're just fucking with me, and then I'm so just going to be the one who gets voted out. So how did you go about getting Eliza on board with all this?
I remember lying to Eliza. I had voted for Eliza simply because the other women had told me to, you know, when they were voting off the other men. You know, I'd always had a good rapport with Eliza. she was a strategist. She was a player. I mean, she knows the game as well as anybody, trust me. She was a huge fan of the game, and I knew that. She made it clear to everybody, you know. So I basically had to approach her with, it's either this, it's all or nothing. That's where we're at right now. We're not at the top of the, you know, we're at the bottom of the food chain right now, Eliza. You know, you're not at the top of the alliance chain with the women, and I'm totally out in left field right now. So, you know what? She was very skeptical, of course, of Twyla and Scout, and I just let her know that Twyla and Scout were basically in the same position as us, you know. But they're not as solid as Leanne. They're not as solid as Amy. Julie had actually, you know, bamboozled her way in there to probably a top three if everything went right through the women.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, just, you know what, just, you gotta... I couldn't bully Eliza, that was for sure. Eliza was too big of a player. She would have went back and she would have threw me under the bus with Amy or Leanne. So, you know, I pulled out a little bit of charm, and I tried to be convincing, and, you know, I spoke of the future to her and what this was going to mean, Final Four, and that's huge, and you know, we're going to be in the finale, and told her of all the great things to come if she makes this move. And by the time we got back to camp and she felt the vibe, and Scout and Twyla kind of gave her the nod, we were good to go. She was convinced.
Okay. I want to ask you about Scout quickly, because for most of the season, the audience sees her as this kindly old woman who, you know, isn't very good at challenges, but is nice, is just there to have a good time. But then we see almost a darker side to her when there's this great scene just after Rory is voted out and they've been betrayed by Twyla and Julie. We see Sarge sitting there by the fire, just miserable at the world, and Scout just starts singing and sort of subtly needling him. But was Scout a more devious player than we were led to believe?
Scout, wow. How do I explain Scout? Scout, you know, the girls looked at Scout, they had a respect for her because she was the eldest of the women. And, you know, Scout was a player. You know, I can tell you exactly how Scout played the game and what I thought of Scout. Scout answered every single question you asked Scout, she answered it with a question. No answers come out of Scout's mouth. Not for 39 days that I knew her. She never gave an answer. It was a question to your question. And that's how she played the game the whole way through. That's Scout.
So what we ultimately see happening here at this final seven, which is a big, very important time in Survivor, as we've harped on many times throughout this podcast, is Leanne getting voted out. And I guess the big question is, Amy is immune here. Was it going to be Amy, or was it always going to be Leanne? And I guess, how did you arrive at Leanne in terms of who the boot was going to be?
I was adamant that I wanted to see Amy go. I felt Amy was just such a power player, and she seemed to have this persuasion over some of the girls. I'm a little bit over Julie, I didn't quite realize how much say-so Leanne had, but at that time, Amy was just, she just seemed to be a force in the game, and what a relief to get rid of her, but couldn't do it that time around. She actually had won immunity that time. So it was definitely going to be Leanne. Leanne and Amy were probably the closest. So we was going to get rid of Amy's closest, you know, ally. Leanne totally didn't see it coming. I mean, and none of that would have happened without Julie, first of all. So Julie was a huge, intricate part. And, you know, Leanne's demise, even though Julie wasn't even in my life at the time, she was a huge part of it.
To set out from the strategy talk for a minute, it's at this point that you start getting on all these fabulous rewards. You have the reward where you meet all the local children, and then Julie takes on the reward to the volcano. What was it like just going on all these sort of random excursions?
Well, I mean, they were experiences of a lifetime, don't get me wrong, but they were exhausting, man. It was exhausting and dirty and stunk, and it was just, you know, it seemed like it was never going to end. You know, Jeff described that reward going to that camp with an Aborigines and experiencing that, you know, ceremony they had. He said we would have a smorgasbord. Oh, my gosh, it sucked. It was horrible. I mean, it was
the worst
reward I'd ever been on. Was that?
You were starving, weren't you?
Well, sure, I was starving. I'm sitting there with Chad, though, and they got a freaking chicken half plucked on a rotisserie 5 feet from us over a fire. It looks a little pink, but the bottom of it looks burnt. I'm figuring that might be our food. Two dogs come up and start chewing on it. I think it's Chad. Well, that's not our food. A guy comes up, shoos the dogs away, picks the chicken on the stick and says, here's your supper. I mean, the reward was horrible. I mean, everything about it. I mean, And you know, it was tiring, and the time it takes you to get to the reward, and everything you got to go through, the process, and pal, finally you're sitting there in front of the chief, and you got some little kid chewing up a plant and spitting in the leaf, and chief's wringing out his spit in a cup, and you're drinking. Dude, it was whack. There was nothing I enjoyed about the reward. Not that one in particular. It was horrible. I mean, it was a nightmare, that whole reward. I mean, they like got us high on some kind of acid and a root, you know, and we're walking around all messed up like we're on, you know, shrooms. It was nuts. It really was. And it was cold, and the food was like rubber, and the women had to work and gut a pig and do all this crazy shit. It wasn't a reward. It was like a punishment. That's what I thought of that one in particular. You know, some of the rewards were pretty cool, man. We got some steaks and eggs at one point, and, you know, we got a chocolate cake, and, I mean, there was some good rewards. But, hey, you know, everything wasn't hunky-dory. You see these people win rewards. You know, it's not all sunshine and mansions when you go on these rewards, man. You may travel 45 minutes to 2 hours just to get to the damn reward.
Yeah.
And, hell, you're not thinking the game's going to kill you. You're going to think the transportation's going to kill you. You know, you got Aborigines stopping our boat because we're on their land, and crazy stuff happens. But, no, man, the rewards, they're nice, but they'll really drain you. They will take a lot out of you physically and emotionally. And when you get back to camp, it's game on, especially when there's players there waiting on you, already pissed off you won the reward. So, I don't know if you like that answer, but it's the truth.
That I can promise you, I love that answer. I want to go from here back to something you just mentioned, which is I want to ask you about your relationship with Julie. How did that really begin forming?
You know what? It was the mix-up. We all got mixed up. Julie and Twyla come on over to our tribe. John Kenny was putting his moves on Julie pretty quick when we got back to camp. Putting his moves on her, I'm sure, not just wanting an alliance and some security in the game, but, you know, Julie's very attractive. He was just putting his moves on Julie, period. And I briefed her that John was, he was not important in our alliance, that he was definitely the next one to go. You know, that she was kind of carefree. She didn't act like she worried too much. You never really seen her scramble, you know, but yet you don't realize she's really kind of listening and knowing what's going on. And, you know, just a lot of joking around and juvenile stuff going on at camp, playing and wrestling. And I ended up with her. There was a time there we were by the fire and it's like everybody scattered. And, you know, I was feeling vulnerable in the game. I really didn't see where she stood in the game. She was standing better at the time. She was with the Women's Alliance. I never ripped her ass over jumping ship. She was a little sketchy about Chad. He had been hard on her, you know, about her not keeping her word. And I just told her. I was like, you know what? There was a time in the game where she looked at me and she said, "You probably hate me, don't you?" And that's all. After she jumped ship and voted with the women, that's all she said. It was about 2 days later. She said, "You probably hate me, don't you?" And I said, "No, I don't, Julie. I don't hate you. I'm just disappointed. That's all. I'm just disappointed." That's all I told her. And you know what? I think that just gave her a feeling inside that, you know what? She felt bad for me that, you know, she didn't stay with us. And you know what? She went out of her way the rest of the game, actually, to campaign for me. She kept me informed of what was going on. I mean, she was huge. She was the most detrimental piece in me getting to the Final Four. Without Julie, I'm not in the Final Four.
So now, before we get to the Final Four, now, at the Final Six, this is where we see Amy go. And was there, you know, once she didn't win immunity, were you confident that you were going to be able to get her out?
Oh, guaranteed. Dude, she was gone, man. There was smoke coming off her heels. We were like, done. And here's the thing, man. Here's the amazing thing about Amy. This was how, she was a player, man. Don't get me wrong. I love Amy to death. She was a stud player. But this is Amy. This is how, you know, when Amy played Survivor, Amy was gay. She had a girlfriend. And Amy was playing the lesbian role, which was great. Scout as well. We had two of them on there. And Amy was solid women. I mean, she'd been burnt by a guy in her past, I heard. So Amy was solid women. So we go to the immunity challenge. I win it. And Amy's on the chopping block and she misses. And we get back to camp early that day. It's like early afternoon. And we're needing wood. We're needing water. You got to do your everyday chores. So we get back to the challenge. I got immunity. Amy's on the chopping block. I head out to get wood. For the first time in 34 days, Amy goes with me to get wood. She goes, "I'm going with you. I'll help you. We'll go hunt for wood today." I'm like, okay, well, I know what's coming. You know what? She's going to want to change the game. I know what's coming. For hours, Amy never left my side that day. And not one time did she bring up the game or what was going to happen to Tribal. Not one single time. She didn't even think about it, I don't think. Never done nothing. I think she waited for me. She never said a word to me. Never tried to strategize with me. Never asked me for a way out. Never. Stubborn, 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 woman, 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 woman. That's what she is. And she was all women, and that's why she went home. She's tough, man. I mean, she...
Were you ever worried that Eliza might have, you know, jumped ship again and gone with Amy at that point? Or did you think you had Eliza very
well? Well, I mean, Eliza had that, you know, she had tunnel vision on the end of the game. I mean, Eliza was a huge fan of Survivor, and you knew it. You knew it at that time, and you had talked enough, you'd lived together long enough, you'd shared your feelings with each other. Eliza, you know, she was dead set on being that girl that made it to the end of the game. And once we had that Final Four alliance, and it was proven, and we voted off Leanne, and it was a blind side, Leanne didn't see it coming. When we went to that tribal to get rid of Amy, that's when Amy started playing the game again. She never played it with me all day. But she was pulling at Eliza's heart. You know, I'll miss Eliza. She's like a little sister, tearing up a little bit. I see Eliza getting upset. But you know what? I don't like it. I'm sitting there. I'm a little disgusted over it. I'm eyeballing both of them, the tribal. I'm like, do your thing, Amy. Try to work Eliza. No problem. But I know, I just know in my heart, I know Eliza is not going to take away the security of the Final Four by jumping over with Ange. She's just not going to do it.
Okay.
But it worried me. Don't get me wrong. I was worried, man. You're worried the whole game. Now, I was worried after Jeff announced me the winner. I'm like, yeah, they make a mistake. You know, I'm still worried.
All right. So when there are five people left, you're now in a situation where on one side you've got a Twyla and Scout who seem to be this really close pair, and then on the other side you've got Eliza and Julie who seem to be getting quite tight as well. And you're stuck in the middle. You have to choose between the two sides. You eventually go with Twyla and Scout. What prompted you to choose them over Eliza and Julie?
I wanted to win. Bottom line, that's why I chose Twyla and Scout. I wanted to win. My best chance of winning was against Twyla and Scout. Now to take Eliza and Julie, I mean, put us three on the front of the magazine, it's going to look pretty good. No matter how I look, it's going to look great.
Yeah.
Me, Scout, and Twilight's not going to end up on the cover of a magazine, dude. It's not going to happen. You know, I couldn't go with the pretty outcome. I couldn't go with the, oh, you know, the beautiful girl makes it to the end with the construction worker, you know. Yeah, I could have, easy. But I wouldn't have been walking away with $1 million. I'd have been walking away with $100,000. And that's not what I come here to do. Period. I mean, that's the only reason. Because I could have easily. Julie and Eliza come to me. And this is what they offer. This is their offer. They say, let's go to this immunity challenge. Whoever wins, it doesn't matter. We vote off Twyla if Twyla doesn't win. If Twyla wins it, we vote off Scout. It doesn't matter. Us three stay together. We go to another immunity challenge. Twyla or Scout's not going to beat us three in two in a row. So once it's to me, Eliza, and Julie, this is their offer to me. They say we go to our final immunity. If I win, no, this is what they tell me. Julie says, if I win immunity, I take you to the end. Eliza's just fine with that. Eliza says, if I win immunity, I'll take you to the end. Julie's just fine with it. If you win immunity, Chris, you pick whichever one of us you want to take to the end, and the other one will vote for you to win. That's the deal they made.
But we ultimately saw you go with the other side, and that, so I think you didn't believe them with that offer?
No, I believed them 100%, but I still wouldn't have won. I still would not have won.
You don't think you would have beaten Eliza in a jury vote?
You know what? Maybe Eliza. Maybe. Because Twyla and Scout disliked her that much. And I knew I had Chad and Sarge. Not a prayer against Julie. I could not have beat Julie in a million years. There's no way.
Yeah.
So maybe Eliza. I don't know. I don't know. Twyla, guaranteed. Guaranteed.
What about Scout?
You know, I don't know about Scout. I don't know. You know what? I thought about it, and you know, it would have been up in the air. It would have been about like Eliza. Scout would have been up in the air. You know, I'm looking at four women, dude, and Twyla is just a shoo-in. Big mouth, no nonsense, rough neck woman. I mean, perfect. I'm taking her to the end.
Yeah, and I think we concur with that thought process in terms of Twyla is definitely the one you want to be sitting next to in the end. And I think also against Scout and Twyla, they're probably going to be taking each other to the final three. And I think even if Julie and Eliza are being truthful, which may or may not be the case, they still may find a way to take each other to the final three. So you're really going to have to win that final immunity challenge pretty much no matter what. And you're going to probably have an easier time of that against Scout and Twyla compared to against Julie and Eliza.
Sure. They were stunned. Eliza's stunned. You don't want to go into a challenge against Eliza. Or Julie. These girls are studs. They were very physically strong.
Yeah, it seems like that choice was pretty obvious. What was controversial, though, was the manner in which you made it. Because, as we see later, we'll get onto this in due course, but you seem to kind of take pleasure in lying to Eliza and Julie and kind of leading them around the ring. Before eventually blindsiding them. Was that sort of motivated by revenge for what they did to you earlier, or was that, or what was your motivation behind that?
There was motivation in voting off, well, I don't like the word motivation. I'm not going to use that. Yeah. There was no motivation. You know what? This is what I see. Because I see Julie and Eliza, and I see Twyla, and I see Scout. Twyla and Scout have known all along I'm in an alliance with them. It's a proven alliance. We have voted together. We got to that point together. So they've instilled some faith and some trust into me. So I got Julie and Eliza doing just about anything they can to stay in the game. I mean, period. I mean, that's what they're going to do. And, oh man, dude, it's just so hard to describe. I'm trying to think of the point I was going to make.
Oh, it's okay. Like I said, we can edit it or whatever, I guess. Yeah.
No, that's all right. Dude, ask me that question again. Just ask me one more time.
All right. So you, the way in which you approach burning off Eliza and Julie, it seems like, if you just go up to them and say, okay, I've decided I can't go with you guys, I have to go with Quan and Scout and just vote them off, that would have worked. But you kind of leave them around for a bit before eventually blindsiding them.
Right. So first of all, no. No, you cannot just go up. You're five people. You're down to five people in this game. I mean, you've been there 34 to 35 days. You've scratched and clawed to get to this point. There is no way I sit back with Julie and Eliza and I tell either one of them that I'm going with Scout and Twyla. There's no way. I mean, I would have to do it 2 seconds before the gag order and we headed to tribal. And it would still be a mistake because they would negotiate at tribal with each other and I would probably be doomed. You tell everyone what they want to hear, period. And that's exactly what I did. There was a line drawn between Twyla and Eliza because they didn't like each other. So that line between them two, it stemmed to Julie and Scout. They were all four that they didn't like each other. And I am certainly not going to rock any boats. I'd rather go to tribal with everyone in my tribe happy and let them find out the disappointment at tribal because I don't have to see them afterwards. They're leaving. That was my outlook on it. Did I embellish with Julie and lead her on? You better believe I did. I didn't want her to give it a second thought to think to herself, you know what, women power. I don't believe Chris. He's fishy. I'm going to go over and talk to Twyla and Scout, and I think I can convince Eliza too. I know she could have. I'm not going to let her open that door. Absolutely, I embellished and I went overboard and I rubbed her shoulders and I gave her a hug. I wanted that security of her not strategizing against me. And that's why I did it. And, you know, explaining it to her afterwards was, you know, it was interesting, but, you know, all the slate was clean eventually.
All right, so after this, you win the final immunity challenge. Big moment for you. You choose to take Twyla over Scout for the reasons you already gave. And so the $1 million is in sight now. All you have to do is put in a good performance to Tribal Council, not mess it up, and you win Survivor, basically. So on day 39, you wake up. What are your thoughts about Tribal Council at that point? What do you think about it going in?
You know what? I'm thinking about Tribal Council. I'm not thinking about what I'm going to do. I'm thinking about what I can influence Twyla to do. More than anything, I want Twyla to be outspoken. I want Twyla to act in final tribal council the exact same way she acted in camp every day the 39 days prior. And if she does that in tribal council, I'm going to win. So my main thought when I got up in the morning on day 39 was I've got to continue to play this game, and I got to convince Twyla that I'm not going to take no crap at tribal. And I need to convince Twyla that she need not do that either. She needs to go in there and let every one of them know we outplayed every one of you suckers. We deserve to be here too bad. And if she comes across like she did the whole game, I'm good to go. And that was my goal the whole day.
Yeah, and we saw you execute that quite brilliantly, I thought. So let's get into, you know, I thought the entire concept of just kind of antagonizing Twyla to the point that she would be not great with the jury was, like I mentioned, just absolutely brilliant. But let's get to your own tribal council in terms of preparing for your final tribal council. Were you trying to anticipate some of the questions the jurors might be asking you and think of the answers they would want to hear?
Yeah, no, I can't say say I was trying to anticipate what they might ask me. You know what I came up with myself was what I wanted to do was, you know, what, no matter what they asked me, or no matter how I come across with my answers or whether or not they liked my answers, I knew I was going to get some criticism. I knew I was going to get some praise. What I wanted to do, and I got a chance to do it, I didn't think it was as effective as I thought it would be, but I wanted to do something I really don't think I'd ever seen done at Tribal, was I wanted to address each one of the jury members individually. You know, I wanted to tell each one of them why I was where I was and why they were, you know, why they were over there. And that was my main focus, was just, you know, maybe if I address each one of them individually, you know, then they'll be looking at me as an individual, and, that was my biggest hope. That and just getting Twyla to be as brash and sage as she normally is. That was my strategy, basically, for Final Tribal. I have some confidence. You know, my intent was I wanted to portray that I'm wore out. I'm finished. You know, this is it. You know, okay. You know, I'm sorry. You know, I played the game hard, you know. You know, I had to vote you out. I did. I over-exaggerated. I led you on. You know, I told them what they already knew is basically what I did. And I did it in a way that I sat there and I let them know I was exhausted. That I'm not the reason I'm sitting over here. You're the reason I'm sitting over here. And thank you. And I'm sorry. I stabbed you in the back, but thank you anyway. I'm glad I'm sitting over here, and do it in a tactful way. And I acted as though I was wore out. You know, the whole tribal, the whole final tribal, if you could just subtract my conversation and questioning by Julie, I was real happy with that tribal council. But, you know, I tell you what, my final statement, and a lot of things got pretty jacked up from what I had, you know, figured out in my head after Julie questioned me, because that hit me in. That messed me up pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't remember, we saw Julie basically ask you what we asked you, which is, why leave me along like this if you know the whole time you're going to be voting me out? And I thought you gave a good answer to that, which is that, you know, at the time you weren't really lying to her.
I don't know. No one cried during the game. I've never seen no one get that emotionally upset. I'll be honest with you, I wasn't expecting it. We went in there. I knew people had some hurt feelings, of course. I knew Julie was going to have hurt feelings. I knew Eliza as well. Of course, I always thought that, well, Eliza hates Swallow so much, it doesn't matter. But I was shocked. I was shocked when she broke down, and I was shocked that I actually hurt her. When she said, "You hurt me," but I didn't see that coming, man. She blindsided me with that, and you know, it startled me and it flustered me for the rest of Tribal Council, and it kind of makes you think, you know, wow, I mean, was it necessary? You know, did I need to do all this to get to this point? And, you know, she had my mind twisted, but sure enough, you know, Final Tribal's over, the jury walks out, I'm sitting there feeling pretty damn good, thinking, whew, I don't think I made a bad move the whole game, you know, I'm patting myself on the back. But it was tough, you know? That whole game's tough.
Yeah, so to what extent was the apology you gave to Julie sincere, or the stuff that you said to any of them?
My apology to Julie was sincere. I was very sorry that I voted her out. I'm very sorry that he didn't get to come to the end with me. Of course I am. I mean, that sucks, but I'm also sorry that I want to win, and I want $1 million. And let's not forget, I've only known you 39 days. So come on, I mean,
yeah,
I mean, it's different now. Put me on, I mean, you know what, that would be crazy. Put me on an island now. Put me in a tribe. Put me in the final four with Julie now after, you know, building a 8-year friendship with her, you know. That would be tough, you know. They need a family survivor or something. You want some trauma. Put a family out there. They're getting nuts.
Now, we saw at Final Tribal Council that you went in probably as a pretty big favorite just because of Twyla's personality in general and how she may have graded people the wrong way over the course of the 38, 39 days. When you were going into the Final Tribal Council, did you think you had anyone's votes particularly locked up? Like, did you think you knew for sure you would get Sergeant Chad, for instance?
Yeah. I knew in my head, I thought I got Sergeant Chad. Without a doubt, I got Sergeant Chad. I was real skeptical about Eliza. Eliza sat at camp and told me a dozen times, I hate Twyla. I hate Twyla. Twyla just verbally bashed Eliza the whole game. I mean, just beat her up. Verbally beat her up. I mean, was ruthless about it. And Eliza took it like a punching bag and would smart back at her. I mean, I really did. I felt, even though I totally betrayed Eliza and I lied to her face, I used her for what I needed her for, and she was expendable. I let her go, and she hated Twyla so much that she still was going to vote for me. And the only other vote I thought I had a prayer at, of course, was Julie. I really did. And after Final Tribal, I felt like I really did. I felt like I'd earned Julie's vote with you know, trying to convince her why I played the game the way I did. I don't know. What does the jury base their vote on? That's the killer thing. I mean, are they voting it on how you played the game? Personal feelings, revenge, you know, statistics. Just everyone's different in a jury, and that's one of the things you got to figure out.
Yeah, so what about the other two women jurors in terms of Leanne and Amy? What did you think about their potential for voting for you?
None. Amy wasn't voting for me. Amy wasn't voting for me, period. I knew it. I wasn't even thinking about Amy. Had no idea where Leanne was going to go. I did know that I wasn't so much the main factor behind Leanne's demise. It was her alliance that betrayed her is the reason she got voted out. So I wasn't the ringleader of her demise. So I was skeptical about Leanne. So surprisingly enough, she did vote for me.
Yeah, why do you think Leanne ended up voting for you? Was it a reaction against Amy, do you think, or... Do you think she was, like, genuinely moved by the answers that you gave at Final Tribal?
No, she wasn't genuinely moved over anything I said. I'm sure of it. No, Leanne was so, I had no idea. She harbored such bitter feelings towards Twyla for jumping ship on him. Twyla jumped ship on him, and Twyla had swore on her son and did all this stuff just solidifying her alliance with the women, and then she jumped ship on him. And Leanne never got over it. It destroyed Leanne. She absolutely hated Twyla. And plus, like Leanne said at the live finale, Leanne said, I didn't vote for Twyla because I kept my word. I told Twyla I'd never write her name down.
Yeah, so, that was a good line.
Yeah.
So do you think, so for her, it was more being anti-Twyla than pro-you, do you think?
Absolutely. Guaranteed. Yeah. Exactly. It was all that. She was 100% anti-Twyla. That's all it was. Anti-Twyla, I'm voting for Chris because of Twyla. That's it. Yeah, you're right.
So if it's like you versus Scout or you versus Eliza, then her vote's up in the air?
Pretty much, sure. I mean, you know, who knows how these people are going to base their vote. I mean, yeah, I had a million things running through my head, you know. Going into tribal, I can tell you this. Chad and Sarge were voting for me. I didn't know who else was going to vote for me.
Now, it's been kind of asserted. You're on a short list of people who are regarded as some of the best, if not the best, Final Tribal Council of all time. Sorry, I'm speaking. I'm getting a bit mixed up. Needless to say, you put in an outstanding performance overall in Final Tribal Council. To what extent were you kind of telling people what they wanted to hear?
The full extent. I mean, what do you mean? I'm not an idiot. I'm not Russell. You know what I mean? I'm not nobody like that, dude. That guy ain't never going to win that game. Are you kidding me? But I'm Chris. I told them exactly what they wanted to hear, every single one of them. You know what I mean? They could have threw their armpit in my face and said, does that smell like cherries? I want it to. I'd say, absolutely, cherries. Vote for me. I want a $1 million. Absolutely. I told them what they wanted to hear. The only way I sway from that at all, and the only part of Final Tribal that you know, wasn't so much what someone wanted to hear, but honesty was just, you know, when Julie broke down, I was sincerely sorry. I felt horrible over it. And I think I told her what I wanted to hear, but it was true. It come from the heart. I was being honest with her. But for everybody else, yeah, I'm going to tell them exactly what they want to hear. Eliza wants an apology. You got it. I'll send you a card. You know, let's get out of here. I mean, anything. So, absolutely.
Was there any concern on your part about, you know, some juries maybe not may not take it so well if they get the vibe that you're just kind of telling people what they want to hear? Did that cross your mind, or did that concern you at all?
Man, I don't know if I dissected it down that far as to, you know, them saying, well, he's just telling us what we want to hear. If what you're telling them is the truth as well as what they want to hear, you know, you really ain't got nothing to worry about. You know, Chad and Sarge gave me a break. They gave me easy questions. Like I said, when it comes to Julie, it was just, you know, my feelings were hurt and her heart was broke. And, you know, I had to, you know, sweet talk her. I wanted her vote, of course. You know, Leanne and Amy, sure, I told them exactly what they wanted to hear. And I don't know if they were surprised or not. I don't know if Eliza was surprised that I apologized, but it sure made Twyla look like a piece of dirt. So it worked, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so your final travel goes well, and we come to the reunion, and you are crowned the winner. And as soon as that happens, your reaction is, I would argue, the best reaction we've seen from it. You just jump up, start swearing, and then run over and hug your family. And I love this, because, like, throughout the season, we've seen, like, you just, you have a knack for celebrating very animatedly.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not planned out. It's not premeditated. It's just a normal reaction, man. I'm excitable. And, I grew up very competitive. I grew up with three older brothers and a dad, man. Yeah, I'm competitive. So, you know, you grow up with three brothers and you play sports growing up your whole life and you're always real competitive, you know, in everything you do. It's exciting when I win, you know, it's exciting when you're on top. And, I get excited. That's just the way I am.
Did you get in any trouble for that, for your response, for screaming out, fuck yeah?
Oh, yeah, sure. They give me hell afterwards. They're like, you yell fuck yeah. It's like, I didn't even know I yelled fuck yeah. Did I? It's like, well, it seems like the perfect response. Chris, you just won $1 million. Fuck yeah! That's awesome.
That's awesome.
What other response is there, you know? What do you want me to say?
Yeah, I loved it when, after you won the final immunity challenge, you can see that you're about to do exactly the same thing, but you realize that you can't because you're holding this massive crossbow. So you kind of, you stop, you put it down, and then start running around and screaming again. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, you know what? Let me tell you something. We were all standing in line. We were getting Mike to go into a challenge, and Jeff had wandered back, and was actually just talking to us. It was before challenge. We was off air, and he was just like, hey, what's up? You know, hey, you're all doing just fine, and blah, blah, blah. And he looked at me, and he goes, hey, Chris, he goes, I think you do awesome at the challenges. You're competitive, and you're hustling, and you're motivated. He says, but, man, we have to dub you. You're just throwing profanity all over the place. He goes, shut up at the challenge, and you'll get a lot of TV time. He goes, you know, he kind of gave me a breakdown on it about a quarter of the way through the game, you know. He was like, some of the things you're saying so unnecessary, but he knew it was in the middle of excitement, and he gave me a heads up. But still, you know, I get so excited, I can't help it.
Any stories about you getting excited during challenges? Did anything Jeff had to tell you to tone down specifically?
No, you know what? I got into it a little bit. The very last challenge when we were up on the logs with the bow and arrows and we had them pulled, we'd only been up there about, we'd been up there about 25, 30 minutes, and it was probably the hottest day of the game. And this cameraman come in, and we were actually on some kind of real slick-looking rock at the edge of the water. And this one cameraman come in, and he slipped right at the base of my log. And he slipped and it startled me and it kind of wiggled me. And I snapped at Jeff and Jeff was behind me, and he said something and startled me again, and I just ripped Jeff's ass, you know. I was like, what's going on? I got cameramen falling at my feet. You're yelling at me from behind. And just annihilated the cameraman. Sent that guy packing. I mean, Jeff tore his ass and told him to hit the road. And then, you know, went back to business saying, you know, I'm commentating, you know, I'm observing this game. I have no favors, you know, there's no special people here. I'm treating everyone. You know what? He was cool, but that was really the only one time, you know, I actually had a discussion with Jeff. But one of the cooler things, like a behind-the-scenes thing, was they always told us before a challenge, after they explained the challenge and how you're supposed to run it, if you have an idea or if you have a way of doing the challenge that may benefit you, you can go to Jeff, pull him aside, and tell him your idea. So we were about to do a challenge where we run to huts, and you run into a hut, and you flip up this lid, and you put this puzzle together, and it's a question. And you got to pick one of the two answers in the basket in front of you. And the questions are about a story Jeff told us before the challenge. Well, he explained the challenge to me, and I said, Jeff, dude, I got a question. I want to talk to you in private about this challenge. I said, dude, I run in there. I put the puzzle together. That takes you a couple minutes. I read the question, pick the right answer. You run out of the hut to the middle of a ring and throw it in the fire, okay? Or you hang it on a hook. If you get it wrong, you throw it in the fire. Go back in the hut. Screw the puzzle, I told him. I'm not putting the puzzle together. I'm just going to come in and grab an answer. If it's the right one, I'm going to hang it on my hook. If it's the wrong one, I'm going to throw it in the fire and come back. I can do that faster than any of these others to put the puzzle together. He was all about it. He's like, sounds great. Let me talk to these guys over here. Goes over to a couple producers, talks to them. Next thing you know, some women walk over. Next thing you know, we're delayed about a half hour. And they told me no. And Jeff negotiated and negotiated with him, saying that's bullshit. You should let him do that. You know, if he's going to put it together, why should he put it together? Let him guess. And they didn't go for it. You know, that was just one of the coolest things I liked about Jeff. You know, I mean, he was for us. He really was. I mean, if you had an idea or if you had a complaint, you know, he would hear you out. So that was one of the neat things I liked about the game.
Well, yeah, that's great. Do you have any more stories about Jeff or anything else that you'd like to share?
You know, just there's a lot of stuff you don't see. You know, it's real interesting at Tribal Council. It's kind of disheartening to watch it and see Tribal Council on TV last 9 minutes. But when I played the game, if I recall, Tribal Council took about 3 hours. And I see the number of questions Jeff asked on TV, and in a real Tribal Council, he probably asks 100 questions. I mean, he asks everybody 6-7 questions apiece. He's very, like I said, everyone says he's so good at his job, and that's because he is. But, you know, you're in the middle of Tribal Council. It's a heated debate. You know, he's asking really good questions. He's getting a lot of heated answers. He's bringing things to the surface. And next thing you know, they say, okay, cut, take change. And you ain't allowed to talk, and you not just sit there. And, I mean, you just won't explode because you're in the middle of saying something. But there's 15 cameras, and all these guys got changed their tape. So while you're sitting there, you know, just fucking with you. Come on. Yeah.
What did he say?
He's like, Chris, good answer on that one. I like that, dude. Way to come to the surface. Julie, I don't even think I'm going to ask you another question. Yeah. Your answers are weak. They're mundane. I'm done with you. Right. John, I'll get to you later, okay? All right. I got a couple questions for you. Right. Sarge, ain't got no questions for you. I'm going to stick with these two. He'll talk to you. You know, he'll tell you what he's going to do, you know? He'll tell you his ideas. He'll tell you if you're doing good. He'll tell you if you suck, you know? And you got people that will argue with him about it. But there's definitely conversation when the cameras are off at Tribal Council. You know, he'll ask us our opinion on stuff and stuff like that. Nothing that changes the course of the game or anything that's going to happen. But, you know, it's the game starts. There's 18 players. There's 450 people from production there and Jeff. And Jeff's really distant. Jeff's just doing his job, going through the motions, running the challenges. and the game goes on for 25, 30 days, and then all of a sudden this guy changes from the host and all business to a little bit more personable. So, hey, what's up, Chris? You know, how you doing? You know, 30 days isn't what you expected. You know, well, okay, all right. You know, and then the next thing you know, he's talking to you a little bit, you know, and on the side he has something to say. He's focusing on you a little bit more, travel counsel. You know, it's real interesting, you know. I mean, he envelops into the game just like you. I mean, you're getting tighter and tighter with these people you spend longer and longer with. But think about it. You're spending a lot of that time with Jeff as well. He does. He becomes more personable the longer the game goes on. And it makes it more interesting, you know. You have a respect for the guy. And when you start building that respect and he starts earning it from you and he's asking you these questions that, you know, can help you or hurt you at tribal, you want to give him a good answer because you've gained this respect for the guy doing his job and trying to make it a good season. You know what I mean? And it makes it tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I mean, Chris, you are absolutely knocking it out of the park with these questions. This is why I want to ask you. What are some of the best things we didn't get to see happen on your season that happened, but we didn't get to see it on TV?
Some of the best things that happened?
So, you know, any entertaining stories, I guess.
There's lots of entertaining stories.
Let's hear one.
Yeah, there's always entertaining stories. This really isn't entertaining, but, you know, we're on an island, and Lepevi had their tribe, you know, their camp stayed, you know, that's where the women moved once we merged, was Lepevi. So I was at the same camp for 39 days, looking across the ocean, the Atlantic, or the South Pacific, the South Pacific, at what was later known as Hat Island. So it's me, Twyla, and Scout. We're getting ready to go do the walk of shame, you know, the final three, the final challenge, and they tell us to hop in this canoe and go ahead and paddle on over to Hat Island. From beach, Hat Island looked like it was about 400 yards away. By canoe, Hat Island was probably about 5 miles. And we're in a boat that leaks. So we head out on the boat. Yeah, we never paddled to the island. Dude, a boat with a motor coming hooked to us and took us to the beach. We were headed out to sea. Yeah, we didn't have a chance of paddling over there. And once we get over there, Scout and Twilight's pissed because they used their canteens to dip the water out of the canoe and they had no water. So they started raising hell. They're like, look, we're not doing this challenge unless we get some water. And I'm like, wow. This is going to be good. I'm not, once again, this is a time where you don't say nothing if you're a man. You just listen. So they're all over this segment with producer Diane about, hey, you know, we want water. You put us in a ship boat. It had a hole in it. We had to use our canteens to pail the water out. You know, we want some water. And, you know, I'm telling you what, dude, it's what, day 38? I'm pretty sure a lot of production had left. I was told later on that a lot of them had already started editing the show. And, you know, the big wigs dwindled down. First challenge, Burnett, you know, the whole CBS cast is there. And, you know, as the game goes on, you see fewer and fewer people with the challenges. And sure enough, man, bad news. Segment producer Doug, not Tom Shelley, but Tom Shelley's partner, Doug, was still there. And this Diane was like, no problem, Scout, Twyla. I'll go get somebody and ask if he doesn't have some water. So I'm like, wow, they're going to give us water. They're going to give us water? I'm thinking, I don't want water. I want these bitches to suffer. You know, it's a challenge. You know what I mean? That's what I'm thinking, dude. I'm thinking, come on. Water? There's the ocean. Look at you drink. Well, here comes Doug. And I can't remember his last name, man. Dude. He walked over and just unloaded on Twilight Scout. He goes, if you want some effing water, quit the game and go get some water. But this is called Survivor. You ain't getting nothing. If you don't like it, too bad. And, dude, they sat there with their tail between their legs just looking at him. And I'm like, no water. I thought it was great, dude. I was like, no water. He walks back into the woods and takes off, and they're just sitting there like, they, you know, they thought they was going to, you know, make a point and show them. You know, they look like fools. Yeah, they demanded water and they got shot down. They hiked their asses out there on that rock and got up on the lungs just like I did. They were thirsty. But, you know, it's not that bad. You know, they're not going to show. They're not going to show that. You know what I mean? Jeff had no part of it. You know, he's off in the distance. But you know, it's just that was one of the things that happened that was just so comical. You know, a lot of behind the scenes stuff. You know, I was doing all these appearances the first year after I won, and it was a lot of fun. You know, after about two or three appearances and talking to a crowd of 200 or 300 for an hour about my experience on Survivor, you know what? The best thing about it was going in and not even talking about day-to-day strategy in the game. I could sit and tell people an hour worth of behind-the-scenes stuff and keep them totally entertained. I mean, it seems like people's more interested in hearing stuff that they have no idea about.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, to take a more serious tone for a minute, you said that you admire the job that Jeff does, but it's interesting because your season was one in which Jeff's biases, particularly with regards to Julie, affected the way in which the season was perceived afterwards. What's your take on that? Because it seems like CBS, and in particular Jeff, did a lot to kind of downplay your season, and in particular how remarkable your win was.
Yeah, I could look at that in a lot of different ways. You know, it was disappointing that our season was overlooked quite a bit. We followed All-Stars. We followed the first All-Stars.
Yeah.
I don't know how much our season was downplayed. It was downplayed, but, you know, I didn't know what to expect. I had high hopes that with, you know, what I overcome with six women would play out to be something special and, you know, it'd be considered a great season. You know, this guy overtook six women, but, you know, it didn't turn out like that at all, man.
Well, yeah, because it's a remarkable underdog story, and yet it seems like your season suffered from a few things. Firstly, it was a season after All-Stars, which, for one thing, divided the Survivor community, because a lot of fans, you know, had certain opinions of it and other fans disagreed with them, and a lot of people stopped watching at that point. And secondly, it's like, since you're just after the All-Star season with all these big returning players, you know, it's hard to kind of match up to that. And it seems like it's easy for a season like yours that comes just after that to be kind of overlooked. And that obviously wasn't helped by the fact that Jeff and people in production wanted to overlook it. To what extent do you think, you know, Jeff's relationship with Julie affected the way that, you know, he viewed the season and the others treated it?
I don't know if his relationship with Julie affected how he perceived the season. I'm not too sure. You know, if anything, I think with him dating Julie, I think that may have actually, you know, gave us a little bit of credit. I think we may have been, you know, put in a better light because Jeff dated Julie. I really don't think he downplayed us, from what I know. I do remember this. I remember it was about 2 months after I won. It probably wasn't even, it was about 6 weeks after I won. And I had did an interview with People Magazine, and I'd been in New York, and I did like a spread for him up on this building. And, I got home, and my wife brings home a magazine and, flips back to a reality section in it where they do articles. And, there's a picture of me at the bottom right corner of the magazine. I think it was People. It might have been an entertainment magazine. And there's a picture of me at the very bottom with a little article about what I overcome on Survivor and what I want to do with my money. And I never really paid much attention when I turned to the page because if I focused on that bottom corner, my wife told me where it was. And I read the article on me, and I looked at my picture, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I'm the winner of Survivor. And I looked up, and the rest of the page was Julie and Jeff at the Emmys, the whole picture. And I remember I called Julie and I was like, so who won Survivor? Who's getting credit? Who's getting all this media attention? It was hilarious. And me and her had already begun doing a friendship at the time. But, it was big. You know, our season was the season Jeff hooked up with Julie. And, I really don't think it hurts, you know, what kind of credit our season got. I don't know. I think All-Stars hurt our season, you know? I think that was the thing. I think we followed something up that was impossible to match.
Yeah, and I think another factor, just quickly, is the string of seasons after yours, which were Palau, which was kind of just Tom Westman steamrolling, and then Guatemala and Exile Island were kind of perceived, at least, as kind of lackluster seasons. And I think your season gets grouped in with them.
Great, man. I know exactly what you're saying. I see it, you know. And I see them put together these All-Star games, you know. I've seen them put together a fans versus favorites. And then they did another one. And then they did a heroes versus villains. And I see myself down in the cellar, you know, that season right after the first All-Star. And they start looking for these players. Well, that's what bothers me the most. They have these people return, and they don't bring back players. They don't bring back no players, man. They bring back characters. Yeah, man, I don't want to watch these characters. I don't want to watch characters. I'll go to downtown New York and stand on a street corner. There's all kinds of fun characters out there. They don't pick no players. That's why they ain't pick me. They pick characters. You know, go ahead and put me on a season with all them characters, you know. That little midget dude Russell and that dude from Boston that's played like 14 times. Whatever, dude. Whatever.
Do you think if you were, if you played again, you're confident you could do well again?
Whoa. Were these bozos that I'm playing? Did you watch it the other night? On there with any of them. I mean, put me on there with any of them. Sure, absolutely. I would be more happy to be in a tribe with this tribe they got playing now. These guys are nuts. These guys are characters. They're not players. And it's a shame.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you will find no argument here about that. And I think Dom and I both and many of our listeners would echo that sentiment about we want to see the players. And there are big characters. But really, for a season, for it to be an all-around good season, it does need to have that element of good gameplay, at least in my eyes. And it would be fantastic if they brought back more players like you instead of just these big characters. Like, you know, I think out of the more recent seasons, and these may be references, and I know you kind of fell out of watching a bit, but we're going to probably be seeing, like, Brandon Hans back and Philip Shepherd back. I think a lot to do with the people they cast now. They're more interested in casting these big characters, like Colton on this current season. And I want to ask you a little bit about this current season, and I guess specifically about that last episode that we just mentioned. What do you think about the guy's decision to give up immunity? Is that anything that ever would have crossed your mind?
Well, you know, the way they portrayed it on TV bothers me. I'm not blaming no one on PBS. I'm not blaming editing, but the way they portrayed it on TV bothers me. Okay, they decided that there was, I didn't agree with how they played it out. The guy saying we want to go ahead and go to tribal, whatever. You know, after it was all said and done, the five freaks or whatever they're calling them, misfits, whatever. When all is said and done, the five misfits stuck together. They did not sway from their alliance. They led you to believe that they were going to vote off that little dude, which I really didn't see no sense in that. Of course, they want to keep you on the edge of your seat. You're going to tribal 3 days early to get rid of the comic. Bill, is that his name, Bill?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it didn't really make much sense to do that. You know, if they would have voted off the little guy, Leaf or whatever his name is, Twig, I don't know his name. If they had voted him off, it would have made some sense to me as to why they went and gave away their immunity and went to tribal. But they didn't. Their alliance stayed strong. They voted off the Bill, the Black Comet, and that was that. You know, I didn't put a whole lot into it. What I see is they stuck together. These five guys have an alliance somewhat similar to the alliance I had. We're the Fat Fives. They're the Misfits. Whatever. Winners, winners is what I call them. They're winning. We were winning. You know, you call me whatever you want. They stuck together. They're still together. These young dudes that think that they should be successful in the game and never are, they're on the outs. And that's all I took out of that game. Going to tribal early, kind of stupid. I think they wanted to do something that had never been done, and that's the only reason they did it. They wanted to be that season we did something for the first time in history. You know, that's a character right there. That's not a player. You know, they're just being characters, and that's what I see.
Yeah. To go back to your season quickly, at the reunion, it seemed like Jeff called you out for lying to Julie, and you know, for obvious reasons, given how close he was with her. But it seems like there's kind of a double standard there, because you know, she did the exact same thing to you when she lied to the guys and then betrayed you again, and then all of a sudden she's the victim and you're the villain who's betrayed the innocent little girl, you know?
No, absolutely. And I see Julie a couple times a year, and we spend time together, and we're best friends. She's the world to me now. And I can sit and have a conversation with Julie at my kitchen table or at her house. It doesn't matter where we're at. And she knows. You know, we talk about it. We laugh about it now, you know. And they're still deep down inside. It's in her craw a little bit. But, you know, I voted her out, okay? I betrayed her. And when all is said and done, I say, Julie, you betrayed me. You voted out Rory. It's all the same. It's all the same. And, you know, and that's all it boils down to. And she knows that. But it is what it is, man. It is what it is.
Yeah. Do you think that the way that the producers set the season up, where it was naturally going to lead to this kind of very tribal men versus women dynamic, do you think they were setting it up so that a woman was going to win the season, or at least for the women to kind of dominate in the way that they hadn't before?
Well, I can't claim to know how they set it up, how it seems. I think they would like to see a gender war, women against men, and they would like to see a woman win it, you know? I mean, it's just another way of saying you don't have to be physically strong to win Survivor, you know? You actually don't have to be all that intelligent to win Survivor. I mean, if you can find somebody that has a knack for the game and is strategizing their way through and jump on their coattail, I can name several idiots that's made it to the end. But we're not going to do that, you know, neither here nor there. But, I think they want to set it up a certain way to get an ending that you know, makes a point or makes everybody scratch their head and say, wow, I mean, even I could do it, you know, she won. You know, there's just too many variables in the game to even think they're going to know what's going to happen, you know. Like, after the first episode, you don't know where the game's going. No one does.
All right, then. A few more lighthearted questions to finish off. What was with the red vest that you wore throughout the season? Is that your standard attire, or is that something that was chosen for you?
Did you find a red vest? No vest. It's been called a vest. It's been called a wise beater. It's been called, I've had it called all kinds. Some guy called it a caveman shirt. Dude, I handed in a wardrobe of clothes to CBS when they sent me a list of clothes to send to them. And I sent them a wardrobe of clothes. And that was a red t-shirt that I bought somewhere, and it was fully intact. And I sat in a grass hut and ate leeks and some kind of rotten cow disease meat for 5 days until the game began. And the day the game began, they called me down to another grass hut, threw me a pair of shorts, pants, and my red t-shirt all cut up. I said, what's this? They said, that's a shirt. I said, this ain't my shirt. I don't have no cut up shirt. They said, you do now. Here, we'll give you a hat, too. Done. That's what I'm wearing. Dude, I didn't look at my 230-pound frame after gouging on cheeseburgers and whiskey for 2 months and think, I want to wear a muscle shirt. No, dude, it's set the chubby dude with the ponytail up in a shirt. Case closed. That's the only reason I wore it.
Chris, I know a lot of people are interested. What are you up to what are you up to nowadays?
I do the exact same thing I'd done before I played Survivor. I live in the same property, on the same house. I'm with the same woman. I got the same job. Are you sitting down, dude? I drive the same truck. Nothing's changed. I'm the same person I was before I played Survivor.
That's awesome.
What did you do with the $1 million then? Or at least what was left of it after taxes?
You know what? It's nice, dude. It's nice having a fat bank account. And I was pretty happy before I played Survivor. You know, I got a state job here in Ohio. Dude, I thought I was busting out life. I thought I had it made. Dude, I had $11,200 saved when I got called to play Survivor. I thought, I don't really need the money. And then I won $1 million, and I'm like, well, I didn't have squat, you know. You just, it's a comfort level, and, you know, I bought some nice things. I bought my wife a, you know, some diamonds, and, but the rest's away, you know. I still work my normal job, and we pretty much live a normal life. I got out of it, you know. About a year after I played, I traveled, and I just did one interview after another, and I got involved in a lot of charity work, and after about a year and a half, I thought, you know what, I'm done. You know, my phone's been ringing off the hook 7 days a week for a year and a half. So I took it off the hook and walked away and went back to normal. So this is really unusual for me. I don't do interviews, and I've been hearing a lot of stuff on different web pages and been on Facebook, and I got a lot of people coming out of nowhere talking to me about my game and wanting to know if I'm going to play again. And I don't know. I just thought, you know, maybe I should do some interviews and talk about it. I don't know what CBS has up their sleeve, but I've had some fan support coming out of the woodwork that's kind of unexpected. I don't know what's going on. So I've been doing some interviews, man. It's kind of been fun. You're the second one I've done in the past 4 years.
Yeah, we listened to that first one, and I liked it. I thought you were great, and that's part of the reason why, obviously, we'd love to have you talk on the show either way. And we do really, really thank you. I know Dom's about to wrap the show up, but I want to get in there. I truly appreciate it a ton, taking the time. You know, it's close to 2 hours now that you've spent talking to us. I've been a huge fan since 2004, and just on a personal level, it was really great to get to talk to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, man. It was really good talking to you. It's brought back a lot of memories. I haven't talked about it a whole lot since, you know, it's been a long time. But I haven't talked about it much since last week. Rob's podcast is pretty fun.
Yeah.
So, no, man, I was happy to do it, you know. It's a good thing.
Yeah, well, this has been great for us. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we have. Yeah, it's been great to talk to you. So on that note, I think we'll wrap it up there. Chris, thank you once again. And that's it from us. Take care, everyone.